Starting a new chapter this evening. And while you're turning there, I just wanted to remind you, this Saturday is our baptism / picnic. Encourage you all to come out, bring friends, bring family, bring food. And be open to maybe having the Lord speak to you about baptism. If you've never been baptized before, the only requirement is that you are a believer in Jesus Christ. And if you are, then you need to get baptized. And so we're going to do that out there and pray for those who are getting baptized and also to come out and support those who are getting baptized. That's a huge deal in a believer's life. So encourage you to come out for that. And pretty sure there's still flyers out in the foyer there if you want to grab one. But tonight, an amazing chapter. It's a story of grace. It's a picture of grace, an illustration of grace. It's going to help us understand in a deeper way what grace is and how God feels about us, how God works in our life. Very important that we get a hold of this idea of grace. Take a look at the text here, 2 Samuel chapter 9. David now is enjoying his kingship, enjoying the office of the king. The presence of God, represented by the ark, is right in the center of the nation of Israel. They've gotten Jerusalem back to be theirs, their city, the holy city with the holy presence of God. There's passion, there's victory, there's all sorts of movements of God in the midst of the children of Israel. And so David now, when we pick up the story, he's been sitting as king for about 15 years now. Now notice what's going on here. It says, "Now David said, 'Is there still anyone who is left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?'" Now, not really sure here what triggered David's thought process, what triggered him to, at one moment, have this thought in his mind after being king for 15 years and to think, how else can I show kindness, especially and specifically to the household of Jonathan? You may recall that Jonathan and David, in one of their last meetings, they had agreed amongst themselves that they would always be together. And Jonathan asked that David would take care of his family continually. He asked that as he would sit as king one day, that David would be aware of Jonathan once again, and especially Jonathan's family. And here it is 15 years later, David king, Jonathan dead, Saul's dead, all that side of Saul's army and Saul's kingdom, they've all died, and now here we are. David there, he remembers something. He's triggered to think, how can I show kindness to Jonathan? Now, put yourself on the other side of the coin here. We're going to be introduced to another character in the story who is the recipient of this kindness. And this recipient of kindness from David is more of a representation of us. Now, this individual who receives the kindness up until this point has not received kindness. Possibly, probably wondering at this point in his life, where is God? Have you forgotten about me, God? Day after day, not getting or grasping why he's in the position that he is in, why life has dealt him the cards that life has dealt him. So we find this individual then as a representation of us, and quite possibly a picture of the concern and the confusion that often happens when God's plan hasn't yet carried itself out in our own life in a tangible, practical way. The encouragement here is that by faith we grasp on to those promises and we understand, even though there may be a lapse of time, as the case of David, where there's quite a lapse of time to where he was promised the kingdom of Israel, but yet did not benefit from that. Now watch what happens. As for some reason David is stirred up to show this kindness, it says in verse 2, there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. So these are some of the remaining people from Saul's side. Saul was the opposition to David in the story. So Ziba, it says, they went out and they called to David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "At your service." And the king said, "Is there not still someone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?" There's an important point here, an important little detail to pick up, that now as David is moved by God with this deep desire to show kindness, and specifically to a specific group, you notice what he says here now as we learn more about what maybe has moved David's heart. It's his desire not to show his own kindness, but his desire to show God's kindness. He wants to show God's kindness, realizing and recognizing that it's the kindness of God which he possesses, that it's not his own, that really makes the difference. He's not looking to show his own kindness, but he wants God's kindness to be extended through him. And I believe that may be somewhat of what triggered his mindset, what triggered him as he's sitting there, that the kindness of God in his own life had inspired him to want to extend that kindness out to others. This was a priority of David. This was something definite, something purposeful. This was a goal of David's, that as God moved in his own heart, that as he was touched by God's own kindness, that he would look to extend that kindness to others. And so, as he desires to extend the kindness of God to others, specifically to Jonathan's household, Ziba said to the king, "There is still one son of Jonathan who is lame in his feet." There was one other, he was saying. Ziba was part of a large group that was involved with Saul's army and Saul's household. But now David was looking to show his kindness based on a covenant that he made with Jonathan. And so he wanted to give that kindness out, the kindness of God, specifically to somebody involved with Jonathan. And here we find an interesting character, a character who represents us, a character that was lame in his feet. We get a glimpse, we've had a glimpse of this individual. If you'll turn with me just a little bit more to your left to 2 Samuel 4. And this little section was inserted. It seemed out of place. Didn't really fit the context, but it was a prelude to what we're looking at this evening. It says, Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who was lame in his feet. the way he became lame in his feet was that when he was 5 years old, when the news about Saul and Jonathan had come from Jezreel, that means that this whole event was going down where David's army was taking over Saul's army. That being the case, there was danger to those who were involved with Saul. And so because of the danger, because now it was customary that a king that would take over would completely destroy and wipe out the opposing king's people and heritage and all the descendants, completely cleaning them out. So with that in mind, it says he was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled, and it happened as she made haste to flee that he fell, he became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. You like that one? Mephibosheth. Guess who his uncle was? Ishbosheth. So those are some fun names to play around with. But if you'll turn back with me, we find that God is such an amazing storyteller. We're finding a divine artist at work here, weaving in the story of grace and the gospel message in the story here. Now, think about this individual. He was 5 years old, and as his nurse scooped him up to flee, she fell and he became lame. In Genesis chapter 3, it was the picture of the fall of man as sin entered in the world that caused man to become lame, spiritually unable to move, spiritually crippled. And now we begin to see this individual, because of the sins of his forefathers, of Saul, and because of the event that caused a fleeing of the nurse, we see him now become crippled. An amazing picture as God is weaving this understanding of the gospel story. Now, with that understanding, take a look again. In verse 3, the end there, it says, there is still a son of Jonathan who is lame in his feet. So the king said to him, where is he? And Ziba said to the king, he said, indeed, he is at the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lo Debar. So now we find this individual, Mephibosheth. His name, Mephibosheth, means shameful breath. So you guys can use that one if you run into somebody who has chronic halitosis. You can call him Mephibosheth, but that wouldn't be very nice. So I'm not encouraging that, but if it works for you. Now, shameful breath, Mephibosheth. Can you imagine having that name? It's possible, a couple options here. It's possible that Mephibosheth had an asthmatic, maybe kind of condition that could be why they called him shameful breath. Possibility is that his birth was looked upon as something shameful, something that was difficult, and something that was troublesome, problematic, for some reason that we don't know. Be that as it may, Mephibosheth now, his lot in life was somebody dropped him. He had no control of the situation. There was nothing he could have done, but he was dropped. Now, this is, of course, is a picture of the fall of man and how sin has entered into the life of the human race and caused men to be spiritually crippled. Now, Mephibosheth is probably about 25 years old here in our story. And it points out now that shameful breath is now also estranged and living in a certain place that's mentioned here, Lo Debar. Now that word literally translates no pasture. Not no pastor, but no pasture. This was a land outside of Jerusalem. He was in the Transjordan area, estranged, hiding, living a life with lame feet, with the name called Shameful Breath, living in a way where he didn't want anybody to know where he was, who he was. He was estranged from God, a picture of man in the Garden of Eden, fallen, spiritually lame, and hiding from God. But we also find here that this area was a place where it was a very difficult place to live. It was a rocky place. There is no pastures where they can cultivate crops, where there is no fertility, no fruitfulness. The picture of the barrenness of a soul apart from God, a place where a soul can't find spiritual food. A soul is weak spiritually, dead spiritually, and unable to find spiritual food. It's a picture of barrenness. It's a picture of unfruitfulness. And so we find here that as he's in this place, notice that it is David initiating the kindness also. All these years being dropped, having a fate that has come into his life that he had no control over. Perhaps the feeling that we can have where something in our life gets dropped, the ball gets dropped, something where we have a tragedy, a hardship, a difficulty that's completely out of our control. We may know what that feeling's like, to just be stuck in a situation that we didn't see coming, that has caused us in some way to be broken, shattered, and hurt, and unable to get back into the place that we once were. It's that feeling of rejection. It's the feeling of distance, of barrenness, of emptiness, of destitution. This was the condition of Mephibosheth. So as he's in this place, David's initiating kindness towards him, just like God initiates his kindness towards us. In verse 5, then King David sent and brought him out of the house of Machir and the son of Amiel from Lo Debar. So here we have this movement of David, which is the movement of God in the life of the spiritually lame, the spiritually destitute, the one in who is empty of spiritual things. And David, a picture of God moving towards us, not because of anything in us that is worthy, but because of his desire to set his kindness upon us, his passion to give us his goodness and his grace in a place where we as human beings have found ourselves estranged from God, barren and unfruitful and lame. So in verse 6, now Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, he had come to David. I want you to notice something. Mephibosheth had a role in this. He came to David at David's beckoning. Basically, he responded. He responded to this movement of kindness towards him. But yet, at the moment, he didn't know this was a move of kindness. There was a anticipation of doom in his life. There was the anticipation that this is it, that his life had been horrible And now he's come to the end of that life, thinking, David's going to kill me now. And this is what my life has amounted to. Maybe thinking that his mother's womb was cursed, thinking that his life was cursed, thinking, what was the point of my existence? Why did I even have breath in my nostrils? These were most likely the thoughts as he went to what he would consider his demise to meet with David. Now, as he's on this journey, notice he did respond. And that's important for us to know that as God calls us, we must respond. It's important to know that when we find ourselves in these desperate, dark, discouraging places, that God is constantly setting His love upon us, but we must respond to that. We must respond by faith. If God takes a lame person, like in the book of Acts, where there's a lame person begging at the gate of Beautiful outside of the temple, and Peter and John came across him, and they said, "Silver and gold have we not, but what we do have we will give you. Stand up and walk." He had to stand up. He had to rise. And I believe in many instances, God has healed us. God has restored us. But see, we're still sitting on the mat. We're still waiting for something else to happen when God says what needs to happen is you just need to stand up and now walk. But see, Mephibosheth, he begins to walk, not knowing the demise, but knowing that's King David, and it's important now that I respond. He's fearful and afraid, but he knows that I must respond because that's the king. And that's true for us. The importance of responding to the Lord. So, as he comes to David in verse 6, when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, he had come to David, he fell on his face, and he prostrated himself. And then David said, "Mephibosheth." Wow. This is a life-changing moment. This is where Mephibosheth's life had completed a 180. It was at the moment when the king spoke to him, because of his response to the calling of King David. And now God's love is seen here in David, the king, when he speaks his name, Mephibosheth. That statement now, that word of God speaking to him directly, of getting his attention. Mephibosheth didn't know it, but it was God's desire to set his love upon this man who was lame and destitute, cast off and barren. Mephibosheth. And he answered. Do you notice that? There's the response. He answered, and he said, "Here is your servant." And so David said to him, he said, "Don't fear." This is important because this is often why men and women distance themselves from God. It's because of fear. It's because they don't want to be accountable to God. It's because of a concern that God is looking to harm them and hurt them and cast them out. But in reality, in God's grace, He so loved the world that He wanted to extend His love and grace to those who are destitute. Now, I really believe it was the condition of Mephibosheth, how empty and destitute and lame he was, that would cause him to respond in this way. See, he realized his condition. He realized how much he needed help. See, if he was self-sufficient, self-righteous, if he felt like he didn't need any help, then he might have responded differently. And such is the case when one comes to Jesus receiving His grace and mercy. We have to understand that we need Him desperately. That although we may flourish outwardly, worldly, that spiritually we are completely bankrupt and destitute and can do nothing spiritually. So David in verse 7, he says to him, "Don't fear." This is God's enticement to us to come. Don't fear, to draw near, to get as close as possible. He says, "For I will surely show you kindness for Jonathan, your father's sake." Notice that the kindness was extended on the merits of somebody else, on the merits of an agreement that David had with Jonathan. And such is the case with our salvation. Our salvation has nothing to do with our receiving of the kindness of God because of how good we are. But it's on the merits of somebody else who was good. He says, "I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your grandfather." So notice now what's happening. Now these are the benefits. These are the results, the reward of Mephibosheth simply responding to God's kindness. And now grace in action is saying, now here's what you get based on the merits of somebody else, based on the agreement that was agreed upon with somebody else between David and Jonathan. Now, not only, think about this, not only is now Mephibosheth, shameful breath, not as easy taken back in to the household of David the king, which would be enough to be a gatekeeper in David's household. But see, here's grace now. He's saying, not only am I bringing you back, am I just going to be kind to you, but my kindness is going to be extended in such a way I'm going to restore to you all the land of Saul, your grandfather. I'm going to restore that which life has taken away from you. That's what God does. That's grace. Grace is not just we're saved, which is good enough and much more than we could ever ask for. But now it's grace, and now it's God working to restore us, to make us whole, to make our brokenness whole again, to give us beauty for ashes, to give us goodness for destruction. It's God making and building up and giving. This is the grace of God. And not only that, he says, "And you shall eat bread at my table." How often? How often? Continually. So hey, Mephibosheth, shameful breath, living in a place with no pastures. Now come on in. And I will give you the land that was taken away. But not only that, come on into my household. I'm going to treat you like my son now. I'm going to treat you like you're one of my very own. Receive the benefits of what God has done in my own life. Receive the food. Come and eat at my table. Come and enjoy the things that God has done in my life. Be a part of this. And do that continually. Don't just come over one time, but constantly do that. Does that remind you of Psalm 23 at all? Anybody? David wrote Psalm 23. How does that one go? He prepares a table. Yeah, I think you guys got it. It's this table God sets before us. And He says, come and eat. Come and eat of me. Come and enjoy this banquet table of fellowship and enjoy my kindness, bask in my glory. In verse 8, he bowed himself and he said, "What is your servant that you should look upon such a dead dog as I. That's how he viewed himself. Unworthy, not even a human being. But don't you just love that? See, God now is saying, you're not a dead dog. You're not vile and wretched. He's saying, you're my child now because of my grace. He's saying, now you're part of my family because of my kindness. And he's saying, and what is so important for us to really understand as believers is what our identity is. His identity was I'm a dog. I'm just a terrible person. But his receiving of God's grace made him one of God's very own. Never forget that. If you're a believer here tonight, you are a child of the living God. You are His. That's your identity. That's who you are. And that's how your approach to life should be. You're part of His royal priesthood, that He has chosen you to set His love, His grace upon you. In verse 9, the king called to Ziba, Saul's servant. He said to him, I have given to your master's son all that belonged to Saul and to all his house. Ziba, you therefore, verse 10, and your sons and your servants shall work the land for him. And you shall bring in the harvest, that your master's son may have food to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's son, shall eat bread at my table always. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. So now Mephibosheth has gone from bad breath guy, cast off into a place where there's no pasture, to now he has servants. He had people working his land for him. This is the grace of God. Verse 11, then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king has commanded his servant, so will your servant do. As for Mephibosheth, said the king, he shall eat at my table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who dwelt in the house of Ziba were servants of Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth dwelt in Jerusalem, for he ate continually at the king's table, and he was lame in both of his feet. And do you notice that he was still lame though? His feet were still lame. He was still in that condition, just like we are in our flesh, the weakness of our flesh. But what's important is that as crippled and weak as we are, as we respond and receive God's love in our life, now we are the King's children. And He's given us a life now, a life in His Spirit that far surpasses any other possible thing that you and I can have as an inheritance or an enjoyment or a pleasure, just because God set His kindness upon us. Mephibosheth, a story of grace. We're going to take communion this evening. You can have Zach come up, and we're just gonna just have the communion elements right here. And I'm gonna ask that in these next 30 minutes or so, you just take it upon yourself to come forward at your time, at your leisure, as the Lord speaks to your heart. We're going to spend the next 30 minutes worshiping the Lord, waiting on the Lord, praying. I'd encourage you through this time to just open your heart up, wide open, to the kindness of God. Some of you here may feel like such a dog that you feel like you can't come to Jesus, that you need to fix your life first and do something about your life. Some of you may feel like you're in a land where it's just rocky and bumpy and there's nothing good about it. I want to encourage you here tonight, as Jesus is here with us in our midst, to come and respond to His kindness. He has set His love upon us. He has healed us and made us whole if we are believers here tonight. And as we take this communion, let's be mindful. Let's be mindful that we need to move past Friday's events in history, looking at the bloody crucified Jesus. And we need to look at the resurrected Jesus, because He didn't stay there. And because He didn't stay there, we shouldn't stay where we are either. And we're implored to walk in the newness of life. That He will make right now all things new for us.
Thank you for your presence. Thank you for your Holy Spirit. Yes, thank you.